I'm Norman Mullings. For many, many years, I was the senior circuit steward in Harlesden. But after many, many years of being involved with Harlesden, as a matter of fact, I have been worshipping at Harlesden since 1959, which is a few years ago. And I remember when I first went to Harlesden, there were very few black people in Harlesden Methodist Church. As a matter of fact, it was not until when Keith Johnson came in the early 70s that we saw a movement, late 60s, yeah. I think when Keith Johnson came, we started seeing a movement where he was more embracing all the West Indies, West Indians in particular,
yes.
into Harlesden, because prior to that, we were not quite welcome.
Do you think there's something maybe, shall we say, in the water?
I probably feel that what is very much in Harlesden is that we as a community say it as it is.
Yes.
We're not too worried about who don't want to be our friends. We are not, as it were, out to just make friends. We're there to try and change attitudes. And considering that majority of us in Harlesden are from the Caribbean, it's only in more recent times that our brothers from Ghana, Nigeria, and other African countries have joined us, that we now have that wider family. In the Caribbean, we were accustomed to having ministers being sent down to minister to us. You can imagine the shock when we finally come up to England and realize that you are not welcome in the church.
Yeah.
And indeed, it was during that time a lot of people felt that rather than being thrown out of the church, they went off to go to find other areas of worship. Mm-hmm. And that was indeed when the Pentecostal churches started to develop.
Yes.
Because a lot of people were not welcome in the Methodist church. And there were no other churches that really wanted them. The Anglicans were just as bad.
Yes.
And so for that reason, that's why they set up a lot of these Pentecostal churches.
Did you come to England then as a Methodist?
I do.
And decided to join the, you know,
yes,
the local Methodist
Yes, we came
church.
As a Methodist. I came from Jamaica, young boy, 18 years old. You know, here I am now, 80 years old.
Oh, wow. You're
and I, I came. And of course, you were supposed to carry that tradition with you. So coming to England was, you know, your worship in Jamaica, and you had ministers from England who came to Jamaica. And so when we came here, and indeed, when the ministers came to Jamaica, I remember my grandmother and my parents, they usually treat them with utter respect. The best thing we grow would be for the minister. At harvest time, whatever we have, we take to the church. And that is how we treated the ministers when they came. Majority of us have to walk miles to church, but the first thing we normally do is to have some fundraising to make sure we have a small vehicle for the minister to drive to church. But when I came here as a young man, and I went, my first experience of being told not to come back was at Fernet Methodist Church. And when I was told that I shouldn't come back, and that was just before I went to Harlesden, I was staying with my aunt. My aunt lived nearby the church. And of course, when I went home and told her that the minister said I shouldn't come back because I may not feel comfortable, and she was about to go around there to have a word with him. My aunt was not someone who believed that, you know, in terms of a word, she may use words that I would not repeat, but she was going to go around to have a word with him, which I asked her not to, because I said, he won't stop me from going to church. I will go to church.
Yes.
And I'm not going to let that one minister put me off.
Absolutely. How did you feel when that happened? Because, you know, you're in a new country, you were doing what you did every Sunday back home, and then you were kind of faced with this barrier in a way. Did it?
It was a shock,
because
I couldn't believe that's a Christian person. We are supposed to be good Christians. Love thy neighbor as yourself. You know, love one another. What sort of a neighbor am I? But it didn't strike me that because you're black.
Yes.
That's the reason. I thought, well, you know, I haven't gone in there, I haven't said anything, I haven't sung out of tune, I haven't done anything wrong. But see what he said, you know, those don't come back because you may not feel comfortable. It's for me to feel whether I'm comfortable or not,
yes.
Not for you to tell me.
Absolutely.
So then I decided, I didn't go, I think I went back, but it wasn't the following Sunday, it was some Sundays after.
So within the church, you've been at Halsden now 60 years even?
Yes, and I still worship there.
Absolutely.
My children were baptized there, I was married there.
Wow.
My grandchildren. So it's Halsden, and I hope that the day when I'm no longer around, they'll take me there for the last journey.
Yes.
Before we go to the cemetery, I will go to Halsden. We're not leaving Halsden.
No.
And of course, during that time, I have moved around most of the United Kingdom. I've lived out of London, but I still come back to Halsden to worship on a Sunday. And even if I travel abroad, I always miss Halsden. It's a place I want to be.
Yeah.
Halsden is a community.
Do you think the church is a good representation of the wider community in Halsden, being that a space that a lot of Caribbean people moved to when they first arrived?
Yes. Halsden has, and I'm going back now from the late 60s, Halsden has always reached out to the community. Yes, we have different ministers who would leave their different marks. And some will always be remembered. Because we had a minister called David Haslam. And during that time, the apartheid movement in South Africa was rampant. But David was such a great person in terms of the campaigns we mounted, the marches we had, the amount of times we've been around Barclays Bank to stop end loans to South Africa because it's killing our brothers and sisters.
Yes.
And David Haslam was very instrumental in getting the whole community to come with us. Indeed, we moved so many resolutions, and indeed it got onto the agenda in a bigger way. We renamed the Tavistock Hall the Windrush Hall, because the Windrush community, those people who came in 1948, who came and rebuilt this country, and when in their twilight years are being removed by a government who has, you know, some of the people who are sitting in parliament own swathes of land in Barbados, Jamaica, all over the place. And their forefathers are multi-millionaire out of the trade that they carried on, the slave trade and what they did in the Caribbean.
Yes.
And yet, you know, we are being told that we are, you're foreigners, you're not welcome here. And so we have, when the Windrush thing came up, Bevan and others and myself felt we need to make a mark in Halsden.
Yeah.
And that was when we decided that we will rename the hall the Windrush Hall. Of course, it didn't go down too well. People feel we're political and we shouldn't get involved in politics. And we are not involved in politics.
No.
But we're just saying it's a recognition that so many of our people, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't. The NHS, the transport system, the amount of things that we have done. We can't, you know, we can't begin to name them.
No.
But we are still considered that we are just as it were. We're tacked on. We're marginalized. And if you raise any issues, you're told you have a chip on your shoulder. I keep saying I have a log on my shoulder, not a chip. Because, you know, I was talking to a very, you know, a person who I would have thought was enlightened not so long ago. And he was saying to me, why did you leave your beautiful country where the sun is always shining, your beautiful sea and beautiful sea breeze, to come to a country where it's raining and it's always snowing and you can't trust the weather? And my answer was simple. I said, if you were not there, I would not be here. And for years we've been saying we need to have a place where we as a community can feel proud that we have built it for our community. And we have been, it's like pushing a boulder uphill. We go up a bit and you come back down. But we continue that fight. And thank God we are now at a point where we have started the development, and we will have a state-of-the-art center where we will have a place, we can have conferences, we can have our social gatherings, we can have our anniversaries. We also have made it clear that we must have some Christian services. Those who won't go to church, we will bring the church to them. And those are the plans we have. So we must utilize those space for young people. We must do things that they want to do. We have been there since 1971, and we still have people complaining that we're too noisy. People can't understand after a funeral, why is it we go back there and play music and drink and dance? This is our nature, our culture. We're not going to stop it. And so we're not going to bury our loved ones and you go back and lock yourself away. You will get depressed.
Yes.
But if you come back and we have a drink and we talk about the good times, it avoids the depression and it avoids you having to go and get counseling and your mental illness starts to come back. We need a place where you feel at ease, a place where you must be at one. And that's what we are. We must be at one. And so that's what Constantine is about. It has been like that and it will continue. So we are out of Constantine for 18 months, during which time we hope that the building will be completed. And so when we go back, those are the things we will implement.
Do you think then, with the Black Lives Matter movement of, well, last year when George Floyd was murdered, and then, you know, you saw it was more the younger generation back on the streets, kind of protesting in the same way that your generation might have in the 50s, 60s, and then my parents' generation in the 80s and 90s. How did it feel to see it again?
I was on one of the demonstrations with some young people, and they were saying, Mullins, what are you doing out here? You should be at home watching it on television. I said, no, I couldn't resist this. We said, what you're doing is the same thing I used to say, but they never taken a notice of us. And now I'm glad. I am supporting you 100%. I am not saying you should push over all the statues, but if you have to be, if in order to get attention, you have to push over the odd statue, so be it.
Yes.
I am not saying it's the worst crime, but don't go around pushing over the statues.
What inspires you to do what you do, to wake up every day and, you know, choose the path you've chosen in any aspect of your life?
I think personally, I don't know. My background, the way I was brought up by my parents, has influenced my life. In particular, my old grandmother. She was instrumental, my grandmother and my mother. My father, not so much. My father, being more or less leave the handling of these kids to the wife, you know, and the grandmother. He is the breadwinner, and she rules the roost with my grandma. And I've been so fortunate that we have families across the spectrum. Some of them are in politics, some of them are small planters who till the earth, some of them are academics. Some do wonderful things. But we treat each other with respect. So whether you are the Deputy Prime Minister, or whether you are tilling the earth, you're planting crops. If you did not plant the crops, you would not be able to eat. So you must have the same respect. Indeed, it's, you know, the person who cleans the chapel here is as important as the one who runs everything. And I remember my grandmother one day saying to me, said, Norman, there's hardly a tree you don't climb. You climb the mango tree, you climb the breadfruit tree, you climb the pear tree, you climb every tree. Did you plant any of them? And I said, no, Gran, I didn't plant them. The trees are here and I climbed them. She said, well, before you leave this world, make sure you leave something that somebody else can benefit from. I want to see that lasting legacy I talk about, that we hand on the baton, and that the baton must not hit the ground. Somebody must keep that baton going. So we are doing a lot of mentoring, and that means that the things that we've done, if we have a chance to do it again, we'll do it differently. But when we talk to our young people, and I spend a lot of time talking to young people, and they sort of hauled me along to talk to them some evenings. And some of our, because through Constantine, we have young people who have developed a number of things that, you know, some of them are earning a lot of money in the city. Yeah. What saddens me, however, is that they don't want to become involved in voluntary work. And they will give money to charity. But they're not coming back. They don't want to come and sit down in the local day center. And I'm saying, you have to start to do some of that. And maybe you don't have to do it every week, but every now and then you must drop in. Not because you're a footballer, you forget that you must come back. Don't wait until when they start giving you grief. Mm. You want to come back and want us to come and march. Don't happen like that. If you forget us when you're climbing up, when you get up there, you said, remember the coconut? Yes. Coconut go up and bear high. But when it gets dry, it come right back to the ground.